Good evening. I'm John Yang. Tonight on PBS News Weekend, we look ahead to the incoming Congress and what's in store as the new Republican House majority picks the new speaker. Then travel woes. We speak to two weary Southwest Airlines passengers whose holiday plans were upended by the carrier's meltdown. And Jeff Bennett's one-on-one with Grammy nominee Tobias Gesso Jr. on his unlikely journey to writing songs for some of music's biggest stars.
I'm very anxious. I wasn't meant to be a singer. I always knew I wanted to write songs, but that was like as far as my nervous system would allow me to go.
All that in the day's headlines on tonight's PBS News Weekend. Good evening and Happy New Year. We begin tonight in Ukraine, where air raid sirens drowned out any New Year's celebrations in the capital of Kyiv. Russia swarmed the night skies with drones and missile barrages. Ukraine's Air Force Command said they shot down dozens of drones. The assault hammered several parts of the country and came shortly after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky delivered a New Year's address just before midnight.
There are a few minutes left before the new year. I wish one thing to all of us now. Victory. And this is the main thing. One wish for all Ukrainians. Let this year be the year of return. The return of our people. Warriors to their families. Captives to their homes. Return of our lands. And the temporarily occupied ones will become free forever. Return to normal life.
Hours after sirens and explosions blared, it was a quiet morning in Kyiv. Many weary residents carried on with their New Year's Day. In Afghanistan, the new year began with a deadly bomb attack near a checkpoint at Kabul's military airport. Taliban officials say the blast killed and wounded several people without providing an exact figure. No claims of responsibility yet. In Uganda, New Year's celebrations turned deadly around midnight when police say a stampede to watch fireworks killed at least 9 people, some of them children. It happened at a popular mall in Kampala, Uganda's capital. The crowd had rushed into a narrow corridor. Today, friends and families grieved outside. Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva is again president of Brazil. Lula, as he's known, arrived in the capital of Brasilia today amid heightened security. Tens of thousands of supporters greeted him outside before he took the oath of office. It's his third term as president. In his speech, he condemned his predecessor's approach to COVID-19 and said with his election, democracy was the great victor. And a passing of note. Anita Poynter, one of the 4 sibling singers of the Poynter sisters, died on Saturday at her home in California. She'd been battling cancer. Anita and her sister Bonnie wrote the 1974 hit Fairy Tale, which earned the sisters their first of 3 Grammy Awards. They had 13 top 20 hits in the United States between 1973 and 1985, including Jump for My Love. Anita Poynter was 74 years old. Still to come on PBS News Weekend, we hear from 2 passengers caught in Southwest Airlines holiday week meltdown, and Jeff Bennett sit down with Grammy-nominated songwriter Tobias Gesso Jr.
This is PBS News Weekend from WETA Studios in Washington, home of the PBS NewsHour, weeknights on PBS.
When the new Congress convenes on Tuesday, one of the first orders of business in the House will be the selection of a new speaker. Normally, it's a routine ritual. The leader of the majority party wins the election. But House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy is still rounding up votes, and that's the topic of our weekend briefing with congressional correspondent Lisa Desjardins. Lisa, we know that nothing happens on the Hill. No one moves, no one coughs without you hearing it, knowing about it. So what's the current state of play?
John, we are less than 2 days away from the new Congress convening and getting ready to elect a new speaker. And Kevin McCarthy, the man who Republicans have chosen as their nominee for House Speaker, does not have the votes he needs to win. You need right now a majority of the House to guarantee the speakership. So 218 votes. Kevin McCarthy will walk in with a total of 222 Republicans, and he does not have 218 of them supporting him yet. He does have a majority, though, and allies of his, like Daryl Issa of California, are spending time like they did this morning saying that they think he will get there. Here's what Mr. Issa had to say.
He has a team in place and is ready to go. And quite frankly, there's an inevitability that he will be the speaker. So now it's time for those few holdouts to decide what is it that they really want. Say it. We'll make sure Speaker McCarthy will make sure they get it.
John, I'm sure you heard those two things there. He believes, Congressman Issa, that McCarthy is inevitably going to be speaker. But he also importantly said there that they're still willing to give the holdouts what they want. So a lot of negotiations still happening.
Well, tell us, who are those holdouts and what do they want?
This is a fascinating group of people. And in fact, look at it in two different ways. There is one group that says they will never vote for Mr. McCarthy for speaker. These are conservatives from around the country. And many of them say, frankly, that they have trust issues. They don't believe that Kevin McCarthy is conservative or tough enough when it comes to negotiating. Now, there is a second group. And by the way, Mr. McCarthy needs at least one of those five to change their mind and vote with him to guarantee the speakership. But there are somewhere between seven, maybe a dozen more Republicans who say, maybe I can vote for a Speaker McCarthy, but he has to change significantly on the rules of how things operate. They want more power for individual members of the House. This speaks to the nature of the House itself, and they include some new members, some incoming members like Representative Anna Luna of Florida. Here's what she had to say on Steve Bannon's podcast a couple days ago.
I think right now a lot of people are not happy about the options. I've gotten a lot of emails from people telling me that they don't want me to vote for Kevin McCarthy. And I do listen to what my constituents say. And more importantly, you know, if going up to Washington means that I have to just fall in line, then why did I really run in the first place, right?
And she's a maybe. This all, again, comes down to the numbers, John. Mr. McCarthy needs most everyone in his conference, and right now he has a dozen or more who are not yet on board his speakership.
We heard Representative-elect Luna there talk about her options. Is there a viable alternative to Kevin McCarthy?
I'll put it to you like this. There is no one who has said they would like to be speaker who is viable. But there are some names being kicked around in case the McCarthy effort completely collapses. Names like the number two Republican in the House right now, Steve Scalise of Louisiana. He's someone who generally has wide respect in the conference. He has said he does not want to be speaker. He's supporting McCarthy, but his name is out there. The other one, Jim Jordan of Ohio. He is someone known for his very aggressive combating of the Biden agenda, pugilistic. He's a champion wrestler approach to governing. He also supports Kevin McCarthy, but he's another person who has a lot of respect. Neither of them running, but those are names if the McCarthy idea does in fact collapse.
There's a lot, of course, on the line personally for Kevin McCarthy, but what's at stake here? What's the bigger picture? What's at stake here?
John, I think really with the agenda, it may not matter who the speaker is for the House Republican Conference because they have a lot of divide that they need to work through. But what could matter here is the way governing happens in the House. Just how exactly, how far close to the brink do they push things like the debt ceiling, which is something coming up in the next couple of months? Those who don't like McCarthy really want to risk that. And this is a question of tone going ahead.
And what happens if they can't resolve this on Tuesday?
John, a really important question. The first order of business in the House is electing a speaker. If they do not have a majority vote at that point, it will delay everything else in the House, including swearing in of members. This is something that has not happened in 100 years. It is yet again some relatively uncharted territory.
Never dull on Capitol Hill for Lisa Desjardins. Tuesday is going to be no exception. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Southwest Airlines operations appear to have recovered from their holiday week meltdown. FlightAware reported only about two dozen cancellations today. But the anger and frustration of Southwest passengers lingers on. Many are still trying to get to where they want to be. We spoke to two Southwest passengers to hear their tales of canceled flights, lost luggage, and missed family gatherings.
My name is Ruth, and I was traveling from Los Angeles to Seattle to visit some family. And then I had a layover in Denver before I got to my final leg of my journey, which was in Kansas City. And the layover in Denver is where I got stuck.
I'm James. I was headed from Baltimore to Denver on Monday the 26th when my flight was canceled. And I had to wait until Friday to reschedule.
I think we went through probably about four delays. And then I started hanging around the gate instead of walking around the airport because I realized that something was up. So at first they said, you know, we're missing one flight attendant. And so we're sorry, we can't take off. Then they got on about 30 minutes later and said, actually, we're missing two flight attendants and we can't take off. And then they got on the overhead and said, actually, KCI is not letting anyone land right now. And then eventually they announced that our flight was canceled.
So the plan was to go from Baltimore to Minneapolis and then Minneapolis to Denver. And we looked and we saw that our flight from Minneapolis to Denver had been canceled. And so we went to the airport to try and get a different flight, but the full service lane was very long. We stood there for about an hour and got, you know, maybe 50 feet forward in the line. It was difficult to rebook on the app. I was looking at the flight. I was trying to check the flight status, but on the Southwest app, I could not get it to load or work at all. My girlfriend could not get the Southwest flight status stuff to work at all. We even called the phone lines and I got a busy signal. And so that was really frustrating to deal with, not get any help on that side of things.
So I had been standing in line for about 4 hours waiting to get a refund or to get a voucher for my flight. And when I got up to the front of the line, I was the next person. I was watching the solo agent that had been working nonstop all the hours that I'd been there. And as I got up to the front, her supervisor came up and told her that she was going to have to work another shift. And I heard her say, I can do it. No, I can do it. I can do it. And then she like started shaking. And then she just broke down crying because, you know, she told her supervisor, I mean, you know, I have been here since 3 a.m., right? You know, and at that point it had been 9 p.m. And I think, what is that, 16, 18 hours that she'd been working. And another shift, it just looked like it was about to push her over the edge.
The whole time it just felt like there weren't enough people there to help. There were people that were trying their best, and I felt bad for those people because they had to deal with, you know, 500 angry passengers.
Both had to change their holiday plans.
We kind of rolled with it, but we were all a little disappointed because, you know, all my family members only take 1 or 2 days off of work around the holidays. I think we've had, 2 hours all together before one of my brothers had to fly out of state back to his house. So less family time than normal, for sure.
Luckily, I was with my family, so I was able to just spend an extra week with them. But unfortunately, I lost out on a whole week of pay because I was planning on coming back and working the week between Christmas and New Year's. When I learned that my flight had been canceled and that I could get a new flight, I called up my boss immediately, let him know, hey, my flight has been canceled, and the soonest I could get rescheduled was for a Friday. This was on a Monday. So he was clearly frustrated.
Southwest says it will refund tickets for canceled flights and compensate passengers for what it calls reasonable extra expenses. But Schmidt says that's not her top priority.
So my flight back to LA is booked on the 1st. And as of right now, I did get an email from Southwest, and they said, currently your flight does not look like it's going to be disrupted. I'm really hopeful that I'm going to get back. I do have to be at work. Just crossing my fingers and hoping that works out.
To update, James Bolter made it home Friday night, but Ruth Schmidt right now is at the Phoenix airport. Her connecting Southwest flight home to Los Angeles is delayed. Fingers crossed. The video sharing app TikTok may seem like it's all either dance crazes or animal videos, but when Lisa Desjardins peeked beneath the surface, or actually beneath the water to be precise, she found a captivating combination of the two. Lisa returns now with an encore presentation of her story, our New Year's Day treat for you.
It's called a shrimp rave. Electronic music, synchronized grooving, glowing shrimp. These exclusive extravaganzas can be seen on the Shrimply Beautiful TikTok account. It's run by conservationist and California State Fullerton student Timothy Utterback.
I would put educational videos or kind of lo-fi piano relaxing videos of the shrimp. And I would put captions listing how they're endangered and this and that about their species. And they never really seemed to pop. Once I started putting the entertaining music on, a lot of people were drawn to it.
The stars of the show are Cardinal Sulawesi shrimp, a small species of critically endangered critters who once hailed from an ancient Indonesian lake, but no one has recorded them there since 2013. Many blame nearby nickel mining, along with other factors, for wiping out the population. They might now be completely extinct in the wild. Utterback says his ultimate goal in breeding them is to help extend their festivities beyond his room raves that are streamed live on TikTok.
If the captive population is high, then we could end up reintroducing them, whether it be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the line. Once they were happy, they bred like crazy. They bred like rabbits. And I went from 30 to having over 1,000.
They gained their TikTok stardom not by actually dancing, but by feasting.
When the shrimp start eating, their arms start going really quickly, and they love being in little groups, so it looks like they're synchronized dancers.
These shrimp raves can't just happen anywhere. It takes a lot of work to replicate their home environment half a world away. Lake Matano is an estimated 1 to 4 million years old. It is also one of the deepest lakes in the world and is rich in minerals and biodiversity.
I kind of look like a mad scientist whenever I'm taking care of the aquariums. I always have 5 or 6 test tubes just hanging out in my room. I'm doing all these water testings just to make sure the shrimp have a great environment.
Striking the chemical balance is a tricky task, but Utterback says he wants to make videos that show people how to do it for themselves so the shrimp's numbers can grow and bring people a little happiness in the process.
It brings a ton of joy to people, and some people tell me they've had a really bad day, or you know, they got fired from work, their boyfriend dumped them, whatever, but then they see the shrimp rave and somehow it just makes them feel a lot better.
Shrimply Beautiful.
Yes!
Shrimp rave!
Millions of views later, Utterback and Shrimply Beautiful are bringing big awareness to one of the planet's smallest endangered animals.
For most hit songs, there's a songwriter helping the singer behind the scenes. Jeff Bennett sat down with an artist who does just that with some of the biggest names in the music industry.
Canadian-born songwriter and producer Tobias Gesso Jr. is one of pop music's most in-demand collaborators. He's now nominated for 3 Grammy Awards for his songwriting work alongside Adele and Harry Styles. Gesso's rise to prominence is both uniquely inspiring and in many ways totally unlikely. Tobias Gesso Jr. joins us now. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Adele, as I'm sure you know by now, speaks very highly of you. She says that the two of you will be writing songs together for the rest of her career. Help me understand the alchemy behind the hit song that you co-wrote, When We Were Young.
When we were young.
That was the first song I was ever sort of a co-writer for. That was the first session I had ever had as a professional songwriter, was with Adele. So I didn't really know how it was gonna go. We sort of just wasted a lot of time talking to each other and getting to know each other, and it turned out to be sort of what the song was just kind of talking about our childhoods and how we grew up, and it sort of led to how the song was made, which was kind of a fluke in a lot of ways.
Well, give me one of the ways. How was it a fluke?
Well, I mean, like, usually if I had known that what you were supposed to do in a session, I probably would have been sitting at the piano when she arrived and had some chords ready to go. But because I didn't really know what to expect, I sort of just was letting her take the lead, and we just kind of ended up going outside to the garden and talking to each other for, you know, hours. And if I had known what I know now, I probably would have never let that happen back then. But I say a fluke because I didn't know what to expect, so I just let everything happen.
In 2015, you released your first and only solo album, and then you walked away from the spotlight. Why?
Because I'm very anxious. I wasn't meant to be a singer. I wasn't really meant to be an artist in that way. I don't feel comfortable in that position. I always knew I wanted to write songs, but that was like as far as my nervous system would allow me to go, and everything outside of that feels really uncomfortable.
For much of your career, Tobias, you sort of lived the life of a struggling artist. Help me understand how that experience informed your music.
I think as like a creative person, like, just you're always searching for the sort of dopamine hit of being creative. And in a lot of ways, that beats sort of like a money system for a lot of artists. And for me, I just chose art over money. I don't know if it informed me. I just still do the same thing. I enjoy creativity more than I enjoy, you know, fame or money or anything. It's mostly about what makes me feel good. And that's just the process of being creative and writing songs, more so than what you get from it.
How is writing songs with Adele different from writing songs with John Legend or with Sia or with Florence and the Machine or any number of the different artists you've worked with?
They're so different in so many ways and equally sort of interesting. And, you know, somebody like Florence, like, she comes in with all the lyrics. She's just like, has all these lyrics already. We all have a hunger. Tell me what you need. Adele, you know, it's very much like a process of just slowly going through ideas and trying to find what, you know, is right for her, and what all of her lyrics and stuff come from just, you know, herself writing in trial and error and stuff. To be loved. And then, you know, just it's different for everybody. That's sort of what I'm in love with about it all, is everyone has a different process, and I feel like I'm like a documentary camera and I just get to see everyone's beautiful art being made, and I don't feel like it's my job to sort of influence it as much as amplify what they're actually trying to do anyways.
Your first professional co-writing experience was with Adele, one of the most successful artists of the day. What was that like? What was that phone call like?
I mean, it was amazing. It wasn't a phone call to me personally. It was, they called my managers, but, you know, when I got to talking to them, they were like, you want to sit down for this? And when they told me, obviously, I couldn't believe it, but she was my favorite artist, you know? She really was my favorite artist, and I had spoken about it, and I don't know, manifestation? Who knows? I can't figure it out myself. It's the most sort of unbelievable milestone in my career thus far, for sure, and the most pivotal moment in my life.
Tobias Gesso Jr., thanks so much for your time, and good luck to you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that is PBS News Weekend for this Sunday. On Monday, an exciting new chapter begins for the PBS NewsHour. My friends and colleagues, Amna Nawaz and Jeff Bennett, take over the anchor desk. I'm sure you'll join me in watching and wishing these two great journalists all the best. For now, from all of us at PBS News Weekend, thanks. Have a good week.